This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
The governor of Texas passes a new law holding cities accountable that try to offer sanctuary for illegal immigrants. What was the fallout? We'll find out now on The Patriot Preacher. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to The Patriot Preacher, covering the news from a Christian perspective. Glad to be with each and every one of you this morning. Welcome to the program. As always, I'm Caleb Colquitt, my trusty assistant, Joe Marcus. I want to say tickling the ivories, but I'm pretty sure that's plastic over there on our soundboard.
I have no comeback for that one. I didn't even know you knew that term.
Oh, of course. Well, keep in mind, I used to play the piano, so I was bad, but I did play it.
Yeah, like I played a good piano. The piano was good, I just didn't play it well.
Ah, anyway. See, that was my problem.
Well, anyway.
Nothing wrong with that.
Let me tickle.
All right, thanks, Joe. Now, we do have an interesting development, and I was actually planning on covering this yesterday, but it kind of got moved to the back of the line, but I wanted to go ahead and talk about it now, because I think, in so many ways, this is an indication of what's going to be happening in the near future, because we're going to see several states. Texas is kind of leading the way on it. I think that it is potentially something that could happen here in Alabama, and I think that that's not necessarily a bad thing if we follow their blueprint on this, and I'm about to explain why. So just to set everything up, Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, has been talking about doing something that essentially would hold cities accountable that try to say, we're a sanctuary city. If something happens here, if you're an illegal immigrant, we're going to keep you away from ICE, essentially not enforcing federal immigration laws. So the governor signed a bill into law saying that the state of Texas, if you are over a jurisdiction in Texas, whether you be a sheriff or any other law enforcement, you have to enforce federal laws, and if you do not, you will be held legally responsible and be held accountable for that. But before we get into the logistics of it, which of course is interesting enough as is, I really want to talk about the way this was signed into law, which I thought was absolutely hysterical. Now, you may be asked, well, how can the signing of a law be funny? Well, here's what happened. They went ahead and passed the bill, sent it to his office. He was actually supposed to sign it, I believe, early morning, midday, something around that time. And, of course, there were a lot of people planning protests and planning demonstrations in front of the governor's mansion. There were going to be protests in cities all around Texas to protest him signing this. And what Governor Abbott did is he said, okay, we'll just sign it early. And the night before, goes on Facebook Live, has a live stream of him signing the bill, and just signs it before the protest even happened. And so, I mean, I'm sure a lot of them demonstrated anyway just to protest the bill afterward, but he essentially just kind of cut them off at the knees and said, yeah, we're just going to sign it early, and he did. So at that point, they had already signed it. There was not a lot to do, which I just thought that was clever for some reason. I'm not exactly sure there's nothing illegal about it. The governor can sign it anytime he wants to. He could have signed it at 1 in the morning if he wanted to, and it's still law. He's the executive of that state. And our governor could have done the same thing if put in a situation like that. I thought the whole thing was clever, because it was almost like one of those things where you're working on a riddle, and then all of a sudden you're thinking about how to handle it, and then there's this obvious answer that just comes to your mind. It's like, oh, we'll just do that. And so that's what Governor Abbott did, just to stave off the protests and whatnot, which I just thought was hilarious. Now, if you want to get into the logistics of what's going on here, and I want to say this right off the bat, because I understand that there is a legitimate question that comes up when generally conservatives talk about sanctuary cities. Because sometimes it will be brought up, although usually not from the left, it's from other people on the right, that will ask about states' rights. And the reason that they will is because would a state not have a right to enforce only their laws, local control, that kind of thing? In general, yes. And I'm always an advocate for that. You guys know, if you've listened to me for any amount of time, my answer to about two-thirds of the questions that pop up about the federal government are, that's not the federal government's job. That duty belongs to the states. In this particular case, however, immigration is one of those rare, and they're very specifically laid out in the Constitution, which I've got right next to me right now. It's one of those very rare circumstances that this is a specifically enumerated power given to the federal government. And so for good reason, I mean, I think it would make sense to all of us that the reason that that is done in the way that it is because the federal government has to have some jurisdiction, because of course you don't want them monitoring movement between the borders to the point where you have to have a passport just to leave the state of Alabama, for example. And so the federal government takes it upon themselves to take stricter measures when it comes to our international borders. And that includes not only the Mexican border, but also the Canadian border and our port authority, so on and so forth. And so this is one of those areas where enforcing the law needs to be uniform across the states, because it is a federal law, and this deals with a federal matter that the Constitution specifically gives the federal government jurisdiction over. Now, that being said, what this bill does, because we're looking at the logistics of it and what exactly it does not require officers to actively seek out illegals. That's one of the big criticisms that people are saying, well, under this law, you could go and try to find someone and ask for their immigration. No, you can't do that. That's not what this law does. That's not what any law does, so far as I can tell. Not even the Arizona law, which was actually a little bit stricter than this one. So what this does specifically is it allows officers to detain people if they have a reasonable expectation that there might be some breach of immigration protocol here. Doesn't require them to detain, gives them the freedom to detain. For example, there are certain, just like with gangs, with drug cartels, there are certain tattoos that people wear. There could be some kind of contraband that the person has that they're in possession of that would give them probable cause to suspect them of a crime. What this does is it allows them to detain those people, and if their sheriff or their local department tries to come down on them because they don't want to detain illegal immigrants, well, there's really nothing that they can do about it because the state now offers that protection if they're suspected of a crime. So it's not like, even if a person is actually here illegally, if he's just walking around town minding his own business and a police officer has no reason to believe he's an illegal immigrant, he really can't do anything to him. All this does is specifically talk about the people who are breaking other laws. Now, if you discover that the person is an illegal immigrant, even if they're not doing anything, you can, of course, detain them, turn them over to ICE, that kind of thing. But in this particular situation, what this specific law does is it only gives them the power to detain if there is some kind of reasonable expectation that they could be guilty of a crime, which is really the same standard that everybody has. If a police officer pulls me over for speeding and he smells marijuana, he can detain me. That's perfectly legal. So it's important to understand exactly what this bill does before we get into a brouhaha about whether we like it or not, that kind of thing. You know, maybe you like it, maybe you don't. Let me know. 860-1440 are the numbers. That would be the way to do that. You can call in, ask me some questions about it, talk to me about why you like this bill, why you don't. And, you know, we'll get a little more depth in that when we come back. 860-1440 are the numbers.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
As to Jesus of Nazareth, my opinion of whom you particularly desire, I think the system of morals in his religion, as he left them to us, the best the world ever saw or is likely to see. Benjamin Franklin.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Patriot Preacher. You're listening to News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers to call in. Now, we have a little bit of a shorter show today. We will be ending it right around 10:30. We're not sure exactly, which I'm going to hope to figure out. Hopefully we get an exact time here pretty soon. But it'll be right around 10:30. We're going to go to the Biscuits. They have a day game. And I wanted to mention, since we were talking about that anyway, that they are having a crawfish boil fest on Wednesday, May the 10th. So that'll be tomorrow. They have crawfish, corn, potatoes, etc. $30 for the game ticket and all-you-can-eat crawfish. If you've already brought a game ticket, $20 for the all-you-can-eat buffet with the crawfish boil. Will be served family-style behind the club car bar. Pre-game music from singer and songwriter Ziggy Lewis. Normally $2 for food and beer coupons for military personnel. And this will be a game between the Biscuits and the Chattanooga Lookouts, which, by the way, we won last night. I was at the game. It was my grandfather's 80th birthday. So happy birthday, people. Glad to be able to be with you on your 80th. You know, he loves the Biscuits. Been going there for 14 years, ever since they came here to Montgomery. Wow. Yeah. And probably the biggest baseball fan that I know and somebody that I have a great deal of respect for. So happy birthday to you, people. Glad to be able to be with you last night.
Yes, indeed. I didn't know that was going to happen. I might have tried to get down there, but I will. I think I'm going to the boil tomorrow night.
Oh, great, great. Well, I won't actually be able to be there because I'll be at Bible study, but you have a good time with that.
And, yeah, I'll study and I the hope... crawfish or some crayfish.
Yeah, there's a big debate on the pronunciation of it. In fact, it was one of my... the questions on one of my tests in college because because journalism. And so there's this whole big kerfuffle over whether it's pronounced crawfish or crayfish and the spelling of it and so on and so forth. So
let's call them what? Mud bugs.
Well, that's really what they are, is bugs. I mean, from a biological standpoint, they're a lot closer to an insect than they are a fish anyhow. But anyway, now that we've sufficiently grossed you out, let's go back to what we were talking about with the Greg Abbott in signing the new immigration bill that essentially says you can't really be a sanctuary city in the state of Texas. And now a lot of people are being critical of this, and they're saying that this is the Arizona law all over again. It's not quite as overbearing as the Arizona law. It doesn't require that you check. All it does is allow you to detain if you suspect that if an officer has a reasonable suspicion that they are illegal immigrants. Now, in this particular case, it's funny that they will cite the Arizona law, but the thing is, even the Supreme Court of the United States agreed with the Arizona law. I don't remember exactly what the count is on the vote, but even a couple of the liberals joined with the conservatives on that, saying, yeah, the Arizona law is completely constitutional. So the idea that first of all, calling it the Arizona law isn't much of a criticism, because even the liberals on the Supreme Court, a couple of them, said that, yes, this is a constitutional law. I believe that was a 7-2 decision. If any of my legal friends are out there right now, you can look me up and check me on that one, and I would appreciate it. You can call in or message me if you need to. But like all laws in this nation, a law requires probable cause. And that probable cause cannot be race. And that's the big criticism that they're saying, that you can just be pulled over for driving while Hispanic. No, that would be illegal. You can't say, because you have to fill out reports on these things, you cannot say, well, the reason I pulled the guy over is because he was Hispanic. No, you have to say the reason I pulled the guy over is because he was exceeding the speed limit, or, you know, he forgot to signal, or, you know, if we're in, walking around town, I had some reason to believe that he was drug dealing or had a firearm that he wasn't permitted to have or something like that. There has to be some kind of probable cause other than race. And so that's the scare tactic that they've been using. And what's funny is, because of all this, they've called Greg Abbott a racist, that he's a xenophobe, that he hates people that aren't from America, that aren't from that don't look like him. Which a lot of those people, I guess, are forgetting that his wife is the first Hispanic first lady of the state of Texas. So he's married to a Hispanic lady. I don't think that he hates Hispanics. But anyway, now, one of the things that this bill does is it holds cities and sheriffs accountable if they don't. So the state of Texas can actually, it just gives them some legal backing to remove a sheriff or remove a law enforcement official that refuses to enforce laws. What a novel idea, that law enforcement officers should be required to enforce laws. So it's really a common sense measure. I've always been thoroughly impressed with Governor Abbott. I think he's, frankly, a big improvement over Rick Perry. But, you know, it's neither here nor there. He's not my governor, but I have a lot of respect for the man. And frankly, I could see Greg Abbott going on to bigger and better things, maybe wind up representing the United States of America as president one day. I don't know. I'm just saying it's a possibility. Especially the Texas governors seem to have sort of a habit of running for president.
A propensity.
A propensity would be a good way
to serve nationally.
Right. He could be a senator someday. We don't know. We'll just have to be watching his career and see what happens. Now, the reason this bill was necessary is because there are a lot of dangerous criminals in sanctuary cities that are getting away because the officers essentially do a catch and release once they find out they're an illegal immigrant. Even if they've committed an actual crime, they're releasing them because they can't detain them without ICE coming back and essentially involving them in, you know, removal proceedings. And that's exactly what happened with Kate Steinle, of course, the lady that was murdered. And I want to say that was San Francisco. San Francisco or L.A., one of the sanctuary cities over there. And the problem with that is when immigrants have more privileges, when they're given the benefit of the doubt, when they can be released for committing a crime, when the citizen cannot, well, then what's the benefit of being a citizen? The whole purpose of government is to sustain and protect the rights that are afforded to people by God. And when the government, when that structure ceases to do that, you no longer have a benefit of being a citizen. And that's why I think this is a good law. I think that it's going in the right direction. I'd like to see Alabama do something like this. In fact, the way our structure is set up with the sheriffs being constitutional officers of the executive branch, this would be easy, an easy blueprint for us to follow. And I would like to see Governor Ivey and the new Attorney General Steve Marshall hold any sheriff accountable that refuses to enforce law. That's his job. And so I could see us moving forward with similar legislation, and I'd like to see that happen. So who knows, maybe Governor Ivey is listening and we'll take this into consideration. We'll be back, 860-1440.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Hebrews 13, 5 and 6. Make sure that your character is free from the love of money, being content with what you have. For he himself has said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. So that we confidently say, the Lord is my helper, I will not be afraid. What will man do to me?
Everybody, welcome back to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. You can check us out on any of those mediums or on HD 95.1 Channel 3, so you can listen to us. There's no excuse for not listening to us. We've got enough mediums out there that you can listen pretty much no matter what your situation is.
And you could listen through the fillings in your teeth.
That's true. Now, take off your tinfoil hat because you will have to do that in order. Well, I don't know. That might help with the reception. I'm not sure. But anyway, so we do have a giveaway to give for you today. The Black Jacket Symphony will be performing the Return to Montgomery Performing Arts Center on September the 16th to present the Beatles classic album Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Tickets on sale this Friday at 10 a.m. all through the Ticketmaster outlet, so if you want to get tickets, you can go there. But we are having a giveaway right here on this show for your chance to win seats before you can even buy them. So tune in all this week for your chance to win with NewsRadio1440.com. That being said, we are going to go ahead and jump into another subject here. Now, of course, the big debate right now is over health care, and I wanted to bring this up. And by the way, I do have a clip that I'm going to play here in a second. It won't be coming up right away, but I wanted to go ahead and give you a heads up on that. Andrea Mitchell was talking about the healthcare bill, and she's one of these political commentators. She was going all over the shows, and I was watching this coverage, and Andrea Mitchell brings up that the picture in the White House of the people that were supporting, she said, well, they're mostly white men. And she was saying that because they're mostly white men, that this bill must be sexist because women were not involved, which, by the way, there are a couple women in this picture, so it's not like there's no women at all. But she was saying because this bill was crafted by exclusively male senators so far, that this bill is sexist and all the people in this picture are all men. Well, here's a question I have for Andrea Mitchell. Did she just assume their gender? Because that, to me, is just shameful. And, you know, to say by looking at a picture of a bunch of balding white guys in suits, to assume that they identify as men just because of their appearance, to me, is just, it breaks my heart, really, for her to assume that all those people identify as men. This is the ridiculous level of logic the left has. It's okay to, now, of course, I'm sure that they all do as identify as men. Whether or not that makes any difference, I won't say, but because you know my stance on that. But at the same time, that's what's so funny to me is, well, gender only matters when we're crafting laws and when it benefits our narrative. So the ongoing line of the left is gender doesn't matter. It's all a social construct. It's all just fluid and out there, and there's no way to definitely define it. There's no way to pin it down into male or female or just two gen. But then all of a sudden, when it is politically expedient for them to do so, well, then we can say for certainty what it was and what the motivation was behind this. So, Andrea Mitchell, I guess the equipment that you have only matters when you're doing so to accuse the other person of sexism. That's the only time where it actually matters what parts that you have. This irrational prattle, and I'm sorry, that's what it is. It is irrational prattle to suggest that an idea is bad for an entire group because members of that group were not involved in the planning of it. Now, you can make the case, if you want to, that a certain plan, a certain policy, does disproportionately affect one group more than the other. You can even suggest that it was done specifically to, what's the word I'm looking for? Done to disadvantage a certain group of people as opposed to others. But if your reasoning for that is, well, nobody from that group was involved in the planning, that's a logical misstep. And if there is a legitimate problem with it, then you should be able to point that out on logical grounds, not just, well, all the people involved were not in the group that I'm claiming. Well, to my knowledge, there were, and I'm going to go ahead and give you a very practical example here. I'm a minister. I'm a follower of Christ. I fail sometimes, but I do the absolute best that I can to model my life after the model that Jesus Christ was set for us, and not just him, but also the other authors of the Bible that reveal part of his will through their writings, through their teachings. To my knowledge, there aren't any of the people involved in making the Bible that were white men. I mean, maybe I'm overstepping that, but we don't have any indication from the scripture because it was happening in primarily Palestine. And I'm pretty sure that none of those people were white guys. So just because there was, I could take the same road that the liberals are doing on this, which is, well, if there were no white people involved in making the Bible, I don't need to listen to it. But that's stupid. Just because somebody from your particular group wasn't involved in the crafting of an idea, that does not make that idea bad. And it also does not mean that idea does not have merit. It does not benefit you. Good ideas are good ideas regardless of who comes up with them. And in my opinion, the pride that comes from that, where you're saying that if there wasn't someone from my particular group, the particular group that I like involved, then I can't accept it, then I'm not going to abide by it. Well, you're going to miss out on an awful lot in life if that's the case. And it's sad for me for them to believe that this could not possibly work out in their favor. Now, if it has actual problems in the merit, and by the way, it does. In fact, I've been a fairly outspoken critic of this healthcare bill. Then go ahead and have the intellectual argument. But to suggest that it's somehow racist or sexist just because there were not any, you know, minority people or any women involved in it, which there were, by the way. That's just because there weren't a lot of people present in the picture doesn't mean that there were none involved. And so there is a difference there. And there were also people involved in the very high levels. I'm blanking on her name right now, but one of the people that actually crafted this bill is a very high-ranking Republican woman. So the idea that that was the case is just, you can't substantiate that. So she goes on and furthers this claim. And one of the claims that was going around on the internet, which wound up being a big debate for me with somebody that I ran into the other day, was that rape could be considered a pre-existing condition because there are some costs associated with medical care that you receive after rape. Now, I take this very seriously. I'm not going to get into any details, so don't ask me. If you ask, I'm going to say that I can't talk about it. But there was somebody that was very close to me a while back that was the victim of rape. And so this is something I take incredibly seriously. It's something near and dear to my heart. But at the same time, to say that because you were the victim of a crime, you ought not have to pay for extra medical care, well, that's the same as saying if some guy comes up and mugs me and shoots me, that I shouldn't have to pay for my hospital bill. Well, no, it wasn't my fault, but, I mean, that happened. And I can't just pretend, because that would be a pre-existing condition, too. If I have problems or complications from a wound I received from someone else. Now, that doesn't make it my fault, but it's also not the insurance company's fault, not the hospital's fault either. So I don't understand the justice in making them pay for a crime somebody else committed. So it's something that I take seriously, and it's a horrible thing to endure, as I know from personal experience, not because it happened to me, but because it happens to someone close to me. It's something that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy, no matter how terrible they were. But at the same time, we can't say because someone is a victim of a violent crime that that alleviates any financial responsibility that they could ever have from that coming down the pipe. Now, I would be the first one to step up and say that we as individuals, if there is a financial need there, that we should help them with that out of the goodness of our heart and out of charity. But that's different than suggesting that everybody ought to have to pony up money, whether they want to or not, to cover the cost of the medical bills of someone who's a crime. And this is one of the points that I brought up. Literally anything is technically a pre-existing condition. If an insurance company really wanted to, under the, you know, before Obamacare came into effect, if they really wanted to, they could make having brown hair a pre-existing condition and they could charge you extra for it. Now, it would make no sense because they would lose business because there's a lot of people with brown hair. And, it, you know, they would be turning away business left and right for that, so it wouldn't make any sense. But technically anything can be a pre-existing condition. And so the idea that, especially with this, where there is an actual increased cost and an increased risk of someone like that needing medical care, I mean, it, you know, that's a terrible thing to happen. But at the same time, I don't know what the solution would be other than that's kind of the circumstances you were given. Some people are born with certain diseases that they can't help. It wasn't their fault. But at the same time, that's just kind of the deck that you're dealt. And I hate that. And it's not necessarily fair, but it is not society's responsibility to take care of your unfortunate medical conditions. And so one of the things that they brought up is that it freezes Planned Parenthood for a year, and that makes it sexist somehow, that it removes the requirement for maternity care. But here's the thing. Charging maternity care to everybody only makes them charge the same for women and for men across the board. It doesn't make any sense for me to have to pay for maternity care. I'm a single man. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to get pregnant. I mean, I don't think that I have a high risk of that. And so all that did was make everybody's payments go up. And so by that definition, because they're saying that they're discriminating against women because women can get pregnant and there's risk involved in that, which means that being a woman is a pre-existing condition. Well, technically it may be, but if you're going by that definition, because I'm a 200-pound, 6'3 man, by that definition, food companies are discriminating against me because I eat more than a 110-pound girl about my age. So I need more calories, which is why I consume more food. They may need more medical care because their body is more complicated than mine is. So we try to make these false connections between the two, or this injustice or this slight that we perceive. But at the same time, there are reasons for that. If you use more of a product, you ought to have to pay more for it. I think that that makes sense to anybody. But for whatever reason, when it comes to healthcare, we get very touchy about the subject. I'm just saying people ought to be able to take responsibility for their own lives and their own policies. And you shouldn't have to pay for the requirement of somebody else. That's all I'm saying. I don't think that's radical, and I don't think it's uncompassionate. If you need help with the medical thing, you know, I'll be there to help, to donate, to bring up donations. We've done this on that show before when people had medical needs. I'm in favor of that, but there's a difference in doing that and saying to everybody, you must pay for all my conditions, and doing it through the force of law. There's a difference there. All right, that being said, we're going to talk a little bit more about this and some other comments that were made the other day. When we come back, 860-1440 are the numbers.
So I give you that name and I said goodbye, and I knew you'd have to get tough or die. It's that name that helped to make you strong.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
The doctrines of Jesus are simple and tend all to the happiness of man. Thomas Jefferson.
Welcome back. You are listening to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. Call in 860-1440 if you want to weigh in. We do have a clip that we're going to set up for you here in just a second. So, Joe, if you'll go ahead and get that pulled up. Before we do, I want to mention our great friends at Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. They've been in business right here in the River Region for over 50 years now. They just celebrated their big anniversary, half a century. We're very proud of them. And the reason that they've been in business this long is because people in this community trust them. And the reason that people in this community trust them and have trusted them for 50 years is because they treat people right. I mean, yes, it's about the cars, it's about the repairs that they do, it's about the products that they sell, like their tires, like the oil, that sort of thing. It's about that. But the way you stay in business for 50 years is not that, because a lot of companies offer that. What they offer is customer service. They like their customers, they take care of them, they make sure that they're in and out as quickly as possible, but at the same time, they do really good work. And they put you in the driver's seat, yes, pun intended. They put you in the driver's seat of your own repairs. They tell you what's going on with your car. They try to convey to you how it's, you know, what exactly they need to be doing there. So you are in control. They tell you what the car needs done. They let you make a decision. If it's something that you can put off for a little while, they'll tell you about that and what your options are. So go by and see them today, Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center on the Troy Highway in South Montgomery. All right, Joe, what you do is go back to the main page and then go to Audio Files, News Clips, and then find the date for today. So anyway, while Joe's trying to find that, let's go to...
Actually, I am on News Clips. I don't see any dates. Let me double check.
Just go back a couple times. All right, having a little technical difficulty here. While Joe's looking for that, what would make your mom the greatest? What would make your mom feel like number one, like the greatest mom in the world? Would it be a trip to the spa, cleaning services for a year, an epic shopping spree, 1,000 bouquets of roses? In celebration of Mother's Day, we're giving you a chance to win $4,000 for mom by telling us what makes her great and what you would do for her if you won. Enter today at newsradio1440.com to enter to win. You know, if you can do that, we would love to see somebody win. We'd love to announce that when it comes. Great thing to do for Mother's Day. And be sure to check that out when you get a chance at newsradio1440.com. Okay, we're good? All right, so this is a clip.
I'm not sure what's on it, but I think we're good.
All right. Well, we'll find out. All right, so here's the essentially what you need to know about this clip. The first verse you're going to hear is Wanda Sykes, who was one of the hosts on The View. She's talking about health care, and then directly after it, during this interview, there's a guy named Lawrence Jones, who's a talk show host, that responds to it. So we'll go ahead and get into that.
Erase anything that President Obama did. I bet you they want to act like that man never existed.
Why? Do you think that is?
It's racism.
Yeah.
That's it. They hate having a black president and they want to get rid of it. That's what it is.
Lawrence, you're getting death threats. What did you say this weekend that caused you to get these death threats?
I was essentially talking about how Obamacare was affecting the black community, which is issues that affect all America. And I talked about the 30-hour rule and how many black folks weren't able to keep their jobs because of the health care law. And it made a lot of people upset for some reason.
Who are the death threats coming from?
You know, interesting enough, a lot of them came from white liberals and anarchists. I think they really understand now that my mission is to educate the black community about issues facing America, and especially when it comes to the far left and progressive, and how they continue to get the majority of the black vote, but they don't do anything for my community. And so what you're seeing now is these people try to gang up on me and try to stop me, but that's not happening.
Well, it doesn't sound like I never thought you were like that anyway. Here's what some people are saying. They got
suspended.
Yeah,
this person got suspended.
Got suspended. Says a white-loving black person is a traitor to the people. He deserves to be strung up. That just gives an idea of the sentiment that you've been receiving. But, you know, it's not unlike what Steve Harvey got, what Jim Brown got, what Kanye West got when they just visited the tower and just said, you know, what is your agenda? This is what my approach was. Just to have a shot at knowing what the white at power, which would Donald Trump would have for the next 4 years, maybe 8 years at the White House. So in one way, it doesn't really surprise me, sadly.
Yeah. Let me be clear, first of all. I'm not afraid for my safety. I live in Texas where I am protected by the Second Amendment. You know, these people right here, they fail to acknowledge the failed policies of this first black president. I'm not going to give him a pass just because he was the first black president. He made a lot of promises to my community, and I supported him in 2008, campaigned for him. So this is not a far-right agenda trying to destroy this man. All I want him to do is what he said he was going to do, which was make our lives better. And any black person in America, if they can honestly say that this president made life for black America better through this health care bill, this health care law, I'll accept it. But that's not true.
Well, then, Lauren, how did Obama?
All right. So we're running out of time here, so I won't be able to finish the entire interview, but that's okay. If you want to check it out, you can check it out on the Patriot Preacher's Facebook page. I'll post that during the break. But anyway, the point in all this is, and I think it's an important point that Lawrence is making here, is that a lot of times, and it's ironic that quote-unquote tolerant liberals are the ones making these slurs, but there is a pass that they're willing to give in a lot of instances to Obama that they wouldn't give to anybody else. And that's not fair and it's not right.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
Andrea Mitchell and Lawrence Jones having a disagreement about health care. We get into that on The Patriot Preacher. Welcome back, everybody. Hour two of The Patriot Preacher. Well, I don't know. I guess I should say half hour two of The Patriot Preacher, because we will be going out a little early for the Biscuits game. But we are on the air regardless for another 30 minutes, and I wanted to address what we talked about right before we went to the break with Wanda Sykes from The View and Lawrence Jones. Just to give you a quick refresher, because we listened to the clip beforehand, Wanda Sykes, one of the things that she brought up is that essentially, she was saying, if you have the reason that people are trying to repeal the health care bill, which, again, as I've explained many times on this program, it's not a repeal. It leaves the vast majority of Obamacare intact. So it's not technically a repeal anyway. But they're saying that the reason that they're trying to repeal Obamacare, trying to get rid of it, is because he was a black person in office. He's the one that advocated for this, and they want to erase his legacy and pretend like he was never president. So essentially, the argument that Sykes is making is the only reason you could dislike Obamacare is because Obama was black. That's the logic that she's going down this trail here. And so Lawrence Jones, who happens to be black, comes out and disagrees with it and gets death threats, threats from this one guy who's a liberal journalist who said he ought to be strung up, making an actual reference to lynching. So it's ironic to me that the tolerant liberals that are all about race relations and healing the wounds of the past are the ones that are saying to black conservatives, we're going to string you up for disagreeing with us. And so now I don't want to subscribe that threat to all of the left, but there were certainly quite a few on the left that were saying things like that to Lawrence Jones. And I love his response. I live in Texas, which means I'm protected by the Second Amendment. So I'm sure that Lawrence has quite a gun collection like myself. But anyway, I think that that points out an important problem here, though, is they really do believe, a lot of them, that any disagreement with Obama must be about race, because he was the perfect president. He never made any mistakes, and everything that every scandal that he did, every underhanded operative that he made. Well, if those were just drummed up by the media, those were just false accusations that were drummed up because he was black. Doesn't that actually sound an awful lot like what people are saying about Trump? Not the black thing, but that any media that was critical of him, anybody that's critical of him, they don't like him. A lot of Trump supporters will say that. They don't like him because he just says what he thinks or whatever. It's not the race thing, but it's the same sorry excuse that you can't be critical of this person. The only reason you can dislike him is because you have a personal beef with the person, not his policies. That's not true in Trump's case, and it's not true in Obama's case. And it one of the reasons that a lot of liberals, like Lawrence said, these are his words, not mine, white liberals were threatening him, is because they know that it flies in the face of their narrative. They know it flies in the face of the story that they essentially tell each other about race, that the Democrats are the party of the champion of minorities, that kind of thing. And it threatens that narrative to see anybody that's not an old white guy pushing the agenda of the right, which is why it's such a threat to them. It's not just Lawrence Jones. We remember how they treated Ben Carson. Ben Carson is one of the smartest people. And granted, I was not even a huge fan of Ben Carson. I say that. I think he was in my top five. He's kind of fallen out of favor with me ever since then, after he left the election because of some of the comments that he's made. But the point is, Ben Carson is one of the smartest people that's ever run for president. Open heart surgeon, genius, separated. He separated conjoined twins who were conjoined at the head, and they both lived. And so Ben Carson is one of the smartest people that ever ran for president. I remember time and time and time again, they were saying the only reason he's on that stage is because Republicans feel guilty about the way they've treated race, and they're only voting for him because he's a black guy. Isn't that the epitome of racism, saying that someone only got where they are is because of the color of their skin? I mean, Ben Carson deserved to be on that stage. He was probably the most intelligent individual up there. Doesn't mean he would have made the best president, but I do think he was the most intelligent person up there. But anyway, we have Mia Love, who's a member of the House. She's a black Haitian woman who is very conservative, one of the people that I admire the most because she's a constitutionalist. She actually agrees with the Constitution. You've got guys like Representative Alan West, who the Democrats fought tooth and nail to get him out of office. Herman Cain, who, granted, there were some things sketchy about his past that I acknowledged right off the bat, but the vitriol that they went after him is kind of telling of it. You've got guys like Clarence Thomas, who the Democrats engaged in countless numbers of character assassination to try to keep him from becoming a Supreme Court justice. And they actually kept him out of the, what was that museum that opened up? I think it was in Chicago not too long ago, about black history, that completely left Clarence Thomas out of it. Didn't even mention him. And so there's this real vitriol on the left for people who are of some minority that support conservative causes because they know it flies in the face of their narrative. Sykes knows that, and that's the reason that she's going after these people the way that they are. And Lawrence, who lays out a case of ways it disproportionately hurt the black community, actually making an intellectual argument, not just it has something to do with race, he was saying that members of the black community were hurt disproportionately. He named specifically the 30-hour rule, which decreased unemployment in the black community, or decreased unemployment in every community, just more so in the black community. And it wound up closing down businesses that were owned by black people. So here's the question. Who's the real racist? The guy who is saying, okay, I have some policy disagreements with this, and that's the reason that I'm laying these out, or the person that says, if you dislike so-and-so, it's only because he's black? Because that's the person seeing things through a racial lens, not Lawrence Jones, not conservatives that are being critical of the bill for an intellectual reason. There might be some people that actually had a problem with Obamacare just because he was a black president, but that's not the majority. And so, I don't know, maybe those people are out there, but not the people that I'm aware of, not the people that have been out beating the bush and doing what I do, which is commenting on it on an intellectual level. And it just, because here's the problem. Wanda Sykes made it about sides. And making things about sides is a problem that we have in this country. We do it with Trump. We do it with Obama. There are people that were against executive orders, that were against increased spending, that were against the stimulus package, that all of a sudden when Donald Trump suggested it, oh, that's the greatest idea ever. And so, yes, there are people that make it about sides, and Wanda Sykes is one of those people. When Obama does something, it's great. And when Trump does something, even though it's exactly the same thing, it's the worst thing that's ever been suggested. And vice versa. There's Trump supporters that'll say everything Obama did was horrible with the spending, the executive orders, the new stimulus package, some of his stances on healthcare, his stances on gay marriage. And then when Trump does, the same thing, oh, it's great. It's awesome. Love it. Well, you're making it about sides. You're making it about people. Make it about ideas. Make it about issues. Make it about the actual content of what the person is saying. If you didn't like executive orders under Obama, you should not like overreaching executive orders when Donald Trump does them. It's just as simple as that. We have this problem of falling into a camp, and as long as, quote-unquote, our team is winning, we feel like we're making some headway on that. But really, we need to be looking at what is actually done, the policy changes that are actually made, and ask ourselves where we fall on that. Because if a law or protection is a bad idea, then we need to get rid of it. And if it's a good idea, we need to support it. It doesn't matter who's backing it. Though it's rare, I've backed things that Bernie Sanders advocated for. It doesn't happen often. But there have been a couple laws that he supported. So we have to get out of that. We have to make this about ideas. And that's a model that I think that is a winning model that will benefit us and benefit the entire country as a whole, not one camp or the other. It's just something to think about. All right, we're going to be back. Star Spangled Sermon is next.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Philippians 3:20. For our citizenship is in heaven, from which also we eagerly wait for a Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. And did want to mention, you can join the Prattville Patriots Pro Developmental Team for their next home game this Saturday, May the 13th at Stanley Jensen Stadium in Prattville as they take on the Metro Atlanta Horsemen. Game time is going to be at 6 p.m., so be sure to check that out. And speaking of sporting events, we are going to be going off the air a little early today. So what's going to happen is we're going to go to right at 10:30, and then we're going to switch it over to Chris Adams' wall. We got a great game planned for you today. So today, Biscuits have a day game. It's one of their Grand Slam school days. If you happen to have a little free time, get down to the ballpark. But if you're stuck at work or for whatever reason can't go today, don't worry. We've got you covered. We will be hosting the game right here on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. So be sure to listen to that. Cheer us on. Hopefully we can get another win against the Lookouts like we did last night. Had a grand slam last night against us, and we still wound up winning it with 8 unanswered runs. So,
and I think the guy who hit the grand slam, I'm not real sure it seems like it was maybe his first home run of the year.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe
something strange like that.
Well, see, I was just watching the game. I honestly wasn't listening to Chris because I was actually at the stadium, which, by the way, sometimes I listen to Chris anyway just because he has such good comments on the game, and it's a more enriching experience, in my opinion, to be at the game and listening to it at the same time. But that aside, I'm not sure if that's the case because I wasn't hearing him, but great experience. Glad to be able to do that and glad to have that service available. So check that out when we go off at 10:30 today. Now, getting into the Star Spangled Sermon, there was a passage that I was reading the other night, and it comes from Ephesians 4, verse 1, where Paul says, "Therefore I, a prisoner of the Lord, implore you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling with which you have been called." What does it mean to walk in a manner worthy of our calling? What is our calling? That's what we have to ask first. Well, if you were to summarize the calling, I think you would have to go back to what Christ said about the greatest commandments. We're supposed to love God, we're supposed to obey Him, and we're supposed to love our neighbors. I mean, yes, you have all the commands that are given, You have the mission to go out and preach the gospel. All those things are true. But couldn't pretty much all those things fall under that one big umbrella? That you love God, you obey His commandments, and you love your neighbors. Really, that's kind of the sum of Christianity. That's everything. Because everything that you do that follows God's will, everything else in the Bible, really just points back to that. And so we have a high calling. That's a very high calling. It's something that's not always easy to do, and it's a very important calling. When we look at the repercussions of it, there is an eternal soul that hangs in the balance when we're talking about these things, and so we have a high calling. And because we have such a high calling, it means we have high standards. It means that when you receive that call, that you are supposed to be one of God's children, you're supposed to be a representative of Him on earth, and you're supposed to obey the things that He has commanded you, well, that means we have to have pretty high standards for that because we have such an important calling. You know, since we're going into a baseball game here in just a second, I like to give this analogy. It's kind of like baseball. Once you're called up to the majors, that's your high calling. It's, you know, you do move up through the ranks. You have high school, college, and then you go into the lower leagues like we have, single A, and then, of course, double A, which the Biscuits are, and then triple A and the majors. Well, when you get called up to the majors, that's your high calling. That's a very high calling, which means you're expected to perform at a certain level. You can't make the mistakes that you did at the lower levels. You have a higher standard that you're held to once you get to those levels. And so in a very similar way, you're expected to perform as a Christian in a different way once you receive that calling. Once you have your calling, once you become a Christian, once you've obeyed the gospel, been washed in His blood, and walk in newness of life, like Romans 6 describes, then all of a sudden our calling, our life, is held to a higher standard than it was from before, because we have a higher calling to follow. Now, how do we do that? Luckily, Paul doesn't leave us hanging, because in the next few verses he explains how to do that. This is Ephesians 4, 2 through 6. With all humility and gentleness, with patience, showing tolerance for one another in love, being diligent to preserve the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. There is one body, one Spirit, just as also you were called in one hope of your calling. One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is over all and through all and in you all. So Paul essentially lays out five very specific, very simple rules. We have to be humble, we have to be gentle, we have to be patient, we have to show tolerance for one another in the spirit of love, and we're supposed to be diligent to preserve unity, unity amongst the brethren, unity amongst our fellow man. And so these are five simple rules that help us accomplish that calling. And if you think about it, all five of those rules go back to exactly what I said about our calling beforehand. They deal with loving God, obeying His commandments, and loving our neighbors. Because all these things benefit each other as a community of believers, and it benefits those who are outside of that community of believers, and it benefits God. And so all these things are done in such a way that will help us walk the way Paul is advising us to in a manner that is worthy of the high calling that we've been given. And I think it's interesting that he brings it all together by culminating it with unity. And it points back to our calling. Our unity comes from our calling. The fact that we only have one God, that we only have one faith, that we only have one baptism, that our calling itself is what calls us back to unity. And so by preserving that, we walk in a manner that is worthy of the calling we've received from the Lord through His scripture. It's a really elegant system when you think about it, and all points back to exactly one thing. It's a high standard, but it's one that's worth living because it benefits us and it benefits our brothers and sisters. And it benefits the Lord. So this is what we should be striving to. That's going to be our show. We turn it over to Chris Adams Wall now with your Montgomery Biscuits. Stay the course, friends.
The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.